Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano.
People don't like to hear the truth all the time. You know, people ask you questions, but they don't actually necessarily want to hear the answers.
Love him.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Canzano, what's going on, man?
He's dead sexy.
I think he does a damn good job.
I'm going to be rooting for this young Portland team, which, you know, is a terrific team. You guys just have a terrific nucleus.
You pay attention to detail. That's why you're so successful.
I just think he's honest. Yeah. Straightforward and to the point.
You're bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I'm really glad to see that someone who speaks their mind is not afraid to tell it how it is.
He's a smart guy. That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Hate him.
You don't want to get nobody a second chance.
Trump. To represent that as some sort of subterfuge by John Canzano, I would have expected far better.
He just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
He was rude, crude, and wrong.
Love to hate it.
Yo, John, I can't stand you. I can't stand you, but I come back every day to listen to the show.
Bald faith truth teller.
Who is he to judge?
Well, he can raise your eyebrows a lot.
I was angry. He just got my feathers that day big time. Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 102.9 and 750, The Game.
Big guests on today's show, Scott Hastings, former NBA player, now with the Nuggets as an analyst. Blazers Nuggets in a race. Who'd have thunk it? He'll join us at 12:30. Dan Dickow, Disco Danny, former Gonzaga star, former Trailblazer. He's got something to say about a potential Gonzaga-Oregon national final in the Final Four. We'll deal with that. Plus, I'll tell you what a North Carolina radio station asked me this morning that surprised me. But first, we start today's show like we start every show.
Three random things.
This is random, but have you looked at the NBA standings lately? And when you look at the NBA standings, maybe you do what I do. You scroll to the NBA standings, you go right to the Western Conference, you dip down around the 8-9 spot, that Mendoza line. If you go to NBA.com, it's a red line. And the Trailblazers are above the red line today, meaning they're in the playoffs at the 8 spot. Again, they play the Denver Nuggets in a game that probably decides who's in the driver's seat entering the final few weeks of the season. But I'm asking you today to look at the Eastern Conference because something weird is happening in the Eastern Conference, and maybe it's flown under the radar in your household. If you look at the Eastern Conference standings today, you will see that the Cleveland Cavaliers have 47 wins, and the Washington Wizards have 45 wins, and Toronto's there at 45 as well. But what surprises you and what's different, the Boston Celtics are on top of the Eastern Conference standings with 48 wins. They're a half game in front of Cleveland and LeBron, and this marks the first time since the end of 2007-2008 season that the Boston Celtics are in sole possession of the best record in the Eastern Conference. I know that we get very myopic in our view of the world. Everybody does. People in the East think that they matter. People in the Carolinas think that they matter. In fact, I did that radio station interview in North Carolina this morning. The host of the show didn't even know how to pronounce the names of the Ducks players. Oh, this Chris Bouchard kid. Tell us about his injury. And Dylan Ennis? What's Dylan Ennis's contributions? And I'm like, man, next thing you know, he's going to drop an Oregon in here. But, yes, we get myopic. We start looking at the Trailblazers. We start looking at the Ducks. We start looking at the Beavers. And, in fact, I look around the college basketball landscape, and I'm kind of pulling for an Oregon-Gonzaga final, if only so that we can say we've got the best college basketball in America right here, and we can make that argument with a straight face. And the women tournament with the Ducks in the Elite Eight, and the Beavers in the Sweet 16, and the Huskies in the Sweet 16, and the men's tournament, you had the Ducks now in the Final Four, you have Gonzaga in the Final Four, and don't look now, but this is a Carolinas versus the Northwest tournament now. But yes, the Boston Celtics, that's my first of my three random things. Celtics, you're on top. Boston, take your victory lap. And maybe make it a quick one. You've won four in a row. The Cavs have lost two straight. LeBron's coming for you at some point. My second of my three random things deals with the Raiders going to Las Vegas. Gliss just handed me a news release, press release that's typed out very neatly and officially before the show. For immediate release, this release comes out of a city named Crystal, Nevada. And apparently, as the Raiders football team is becoming a reality, and it got 31 of the 32 votes from the NFL owners approving their move to Sin City, the owner of the Bunny Ranch brothel in Sin City has announced that he will open a sports-themed House of Ill Repute to coincide with the launch of the team's new Las Vegas stadium in 2020. He's got a license, apparently, and he's quoted in the release. I'll just read his quote, because whenever you can quote a brothel owner, you have to quote him right. Quote, "I've had a license for the seventh brothel near Las Vegas for some time now, but I was waiting for the right time to launch another house of debauchery." End quote. Now, he already owns the Bunny Ranch. He has another quote in here. I guess I should read it. Quote, "The Raiders coming to Vegas, it means big business for me, so my sex den will honor the men in black and Raider Nation." Now, what he's doing is he's going to open a place he's calling Pirates Booty Sports Brothel. It'll be the first brothel that's dedicated to athletes and their diehard fans, according to the owner. And apparently, if you are an NFL player or staff member, you will get 50% off going to the brothel. So an official release coming out of Las Vegas. Put that one in the file cabinet. There you go. That's my second of my three random things. Oh, the Raiders. You're still, don't stop doing you, Raiders. You know what I mean? It's like, to this point, you've always been you. Al Davis, may he rest in peace. Just don't stop doing you if you're the Raiders. That's my message to them. My third of my three random things relates to CBS. I've got to call in to an executive at CBS to get an answer to this, but let me just throw out there that it's possible, as I mentioned earlier, that this Oregon-Gonzaga NCAA tournament final would be a dream matchup around here. Like, the rest of the country would look at men's college basketball and go, hey, gosh, you know, best two teams in America right there in the Northwest, Spokane and Eugene. It's also possible that CBS would hate this matchup. So I jumped on the telephone this morning. I called up a couple members of the executive team at CBS. They were in meetings. Then I got, I tried the head of the press relations in a meeting. Then I found there was a spokesperson for CBS Sports also in a meeting. And what I'm gathering is if you work at CBS corporate, you better bring some toothpicks to work in the morning to keep your eyelids open because you're going to be in meetings all day. But I'm going to ask them about this matchup. Is it a nightmare matchup? And again, let's go back to the television deal that the NCAA has with CBS. They originally had a $10.8 billion deal that they signed in 2010. It ran through 2024. So you'd think like, yeah, around 2022 or so, they start renegotiating. No. That was working so well for both sides that last year, halfway through the deal, they tacked on an additional eight more years at an additional $8.8 billion. Okay? This is $1 billion a year plus enterprise for the NCAA. I love this tournament. CBS loves this tournament. Turner loves this tournament. The NCAA loves this tournament. But if we get a national final without a brand name in it, with no Carolina in it, is the rest of America going to watch it? Now, I don't really care, but I wonder if CBS does. And I'm waiting for CBS to get back to me about this possible nightmare game, but there, the Ducks got the Final Four. The women got to the Elite Eight. Oregon State made the Final Four last season in the women's bracket. Got the Sweet 16 this year. The Washington women made the national title game last year. Got the Sweet 16 this year. What I'm saying is we kind of do college basketball as well as anybody else in America right now, do we not? Like, apologies to Duke, Carolina, Kentucky, and Kansas, but you know, you've kind of held the patent on what is college basketball. But I was asked this morning on that radio station in Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina, I was asked, why should the Tar Heels be worried about the Ducks? And I'm like, what a question. Like, why should they be worried? Because they're playing them. Because they stand between them and a national title appearance. And then the question was rephrased, and it says, well, what do they need to be worried about? So I started talking about Tyler Dorsey. He's had a red-hot tournament. And if you look at his statistics earlier this season, you couldn't find games where he scored 20 points in back-to-back games. But he has now done it in seven straight, and he has done it in a way that is absolutely thrilling.
Anybody know what today is?
What you talking about, Willis?
Take a shot.
Final 9 seconds. What a first half by Oregon.
What a first half by Dorsey and Bell.
Oh no!
Are you kidding me? You've got to be kidding me. From Mr. March, you don't get that name if you don't show out. Tyler Dorsey, Oregon Ducks. What a first half performance here.
Dorsey's been on fire. So I talked about Dorsey's red-hot tournament. Then I talked about Jordan Bell, who has been nothing short of remarkable in controlling the paint. And by the way,
it feels amazing. I never had a feeling. I never won, never got this far in my life, man. They sleep on us, man. Shout out to Long Beach, man. They sleep on all of us out there, man.
They sleep on all of us, he says. Then I started talking about how passionate Dylan Brooks is and how emotional he plays, because his game really is emotional.
You know, it just gives my teammates confidence. You know, I can get a little bit rambunctious sometimes, and, you know, coach tells me to calm down. My teammates tell me to calm down, but you know, it's just a motivator to me, and it motivates my teammates to, you know, do great plays. And, you know, TT was, you know, playing his mind off, and Tyler was playing his mind off, and it gets the guys going. And, you know, that's what I want to do. I want to be an energy giver, not a, you know, energy taker.
Dylan Brooks is energy. That's what Carolina needs to worry about. But the thing that Carolina most needs to worry about, the answer is, you most need to worry about becoming a dinosaur. Because I looked at Kansas and Kentucky, of course, in this tournament. They played deep, and Duke is fine. Duke is Duke. But if you look at really what made up, why, and I'm asking this question, why do you think Kansas and Kentucky and North Carolina and Duke rank 1, 2, 3, 4 in victories and in presence nationally when it comes to college basketball? None of them are located in major metropolitan cities. They've all been built on great coaching and program culture. But what they have garnered out of that is now they're being built on huge revenue streams that are created by that history. Duke basketball has $34 million in annual revenue. North Carolina, $20 million in annual revenue. Kansas is up there. Kentucky's up there. Oregon is not. But the North American headquarters of Adidas are here in Portland. Under Armour is here. Nike's world headquarters are in Beaverton. And so, yeah, you might have 5 national titles and 5 runner-up appearances if you're North Carolina. But shouldn't the best basketball hub in America be in near proximity to the innovators who have shaped college athletics? Haven't those sneaker companies done it? So I guess what I'm asking is this a pivot point in college athletics? Or is it just a basketball tournament? Because I keep wrestling back and forth with the big picture. If Oregon wins this thing, or Gonzaga wins this thing, or if the Carolinas are excused on Saturday night, and this becomes a Northwest weekend, heading into Monday night's national championship game, if it's Gonzaga and Oregon, can't we, with a straight face, go, hey, the best basketball in America is being played right here? Which brings us to today. What is today?
Anybody know what today is?
What you talking about, Willis?
Take a shot. Take a stab. What is it? What happened? What does it mean? Tell us what today is. 503-417-7575.
Tuesday, March the 28th, 2017. Well, today's the day that the Raiders are settling in on the idea that they have plans to go to Vegas. Also, President Trump's approval rating in the last Gallup poll hit a new low, 36%. Also, by the way, Japan apparently has an obsession with high-quality fruit. Like, we all have things that we love, but in Japan, apparently, fruit, people are going nuts for grapefruit. And I have a friend who's a grape farmer, and he's probably all over this already, but if you have, like, specifically farmed fruits, like immensely flavorful fruits that can be given as a gift or a delicacy, apparently, according to Slate Magazine, a crate of grapes fetched $27,000 recently. And this was a story in today's Slate Magazine. So is today the day that fruit became gold? Well, to me today, if you ask what is today about, it's about, A, the Trailblazers in their pursuit of grabbing that eight spot. I think the winner of tonight's Nuggets-Blazers game wins the eight spot. But I also think that today is about maybe reflecting on the big picture in college basketball. And I know that the rest of the country might be looking at an Oregon-Gonzaga final and rolling their eyes and going, no, we can't have that. There's no basketball brand name in that. There's nothing big. And Gonzaga is probably a bigger brand name in basketball than Oregon is. Oregon's a football school. And I even asked, you know, Landon Lucas, the Kansas center, you know, he's a big Oregon fan. His dad played at Oregon. Asked him, you know, what do you think when you think about Oregon? And he says it's hard not to think about football when you think about Oregon. So I think today is the day when Oregon takes a climb up the hill, maybe, towards being a basketball school. I think if they get to the title game, I think we could say with a straight face, they might be a basketball school. Also a football school. But also, I think it's a day for the Northwest to kind of puff its chest out and go, hey, we don't care if CBS thinks that this is great ratings. And I know what CBS is going to say. CBS, if they're smart, they come back and go, nah, we just want the best game. The tournament's a draw by itself, which I think it is. Because I watch when Butler's in it. I watch when George Mason's in it. I watch when Marquette's in the Final Four. Are you telling me people in Chapel Hill and Raleigh and Texas and in the northeast part of the country aren't going to watch a national final that has Gonzaga and Oregon? Please. 417-7575 is the number. Tell me what today is. Let's go down to Gliss, who's running a daycare center down there. He's got another kid. Who'd you bring in today?
The middle child, Owen, the 8-year-old. It's his turn to come in to work, so he's out there doing his thing.
Are the kids excited when it's their turn to come in to work? Is it like, oh, Owen gets to go today?
Yes, definitely. Colin wanted to come back to work today.
Really?
Yeah. He had his blazer on and everything. I think he was trying to convince me.
I think we got Colin a job in the sales staff. He's better dressed than anybody around here. Yeah. Right. What's today?
Come on, man. It's all about the Blazers. You know I'm going to say that. I'm a little homer on the Blazers, but you know, it doesn't get much better than that with 9 games left in the season, 2 teams in a virtual tie playing for the 8th seed.
Is this the best, most dramatic, most interesting time of the year? Because they're in a pennant race.
Yeah. I mean, it's the equivalent to that. I mean, I don't think, for me, I'm a big baseball guy. I don't think you can top the pennant races in baseball. But yeah, when you have 2 teams locked into the same spot and they're fighting for one final spot in the playoffs, I think this is about as big of a game as you could ask for.
What's going to happen tonight, 7 o'clock?
I don't know. I got to be nervous. I'm a little nervous. Denver, I mean, just the way they run, they put up so many points. I think it could be a really fun game, but I'm hoping the Blazers will be able to pull it out.
Blazers have been hot, though. I mean, you have to like the way they're playing. And, you know, if they weren't playing their best basketball, and then certainly the Denver last time out got beat by 25.
Yeah, and the other kind of side note that I'm really interested to see is Jokic versus Nurkic. I think that's going to be fun to watch those two guys. Who
big guys.
Yeah, the two guys who didn't really seemingly get along in Denver, and you know, Nurkic got beat out. So.
All right, I'm going to ask Scott Hastings. He's with the Nuggets now as an analyst. He's in town. He's also a former NBA player and an NBA champion. I'll ask him about the Nuggets and Blazers, and he's next.
Hello, I'm John Lovitz, and you're listening to John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Kind of a sad story out there. I guess a continuing sad story. Former Oregon tight end Colt Lierla arrested again for heroin possession and forgery. According to the Oregon Daily Emerald, he's being held at Washington County Jail in Hillsboro. You may remember he had a felony heroin possession in February. He got 18 months probation there. And he's, you know, apparently he got another issue going on and it doesn't end. So, you know, I just keep rolling, slapping my forehead every time I see Colt in the news. And I think it's just a case of a guy who has had a problem and continues to have a problem. And I know he gets angry when people talk about it. We've talked about it. I've written about it. And, you know, start doing the right thing. People stop talking about it. Let's move on to the Blazers and Nuggets. Tonight, Moda Center, 7 o'clock. This is a race for the 8th spot. And maybe it's a death sentence to get the 8th spot in the NBA playoffs right now in either conference. But let's talk to Scott Hastings, former NBA player, and now with the Nuggets as an analyst about that. How are you, sir?
Good, good. How you doing, John?
What's your favorite part about coming to Portland? You come to Portland, what does Scott Hastings have to do?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. Well, I always sleep well, and I don't know if that's because I have cold beverages late at night before. I don't know. That's a good question. I will say this. I do a radio show, too, and, you know, you travel and you carry the little box and you do the Wi-Fi and blah, blah, blah. And I enjoy, to be honest with you, walking around. Denver, we get 300 days of sunshine, and I'm not complaining because I love the sunshine, but it's kind of nice when you haven't kind of seen these cool, moist, rainy days that I don't mind them in small doses. So we down here by Pioneer Square, and I just walk around and hit a subway, go over there to the Rite Aid, grab me a little something there to drink from the Rite Aid, and come back to the room.
You're a simple guy. I like that.
You know, listen, I grew up in Kansas. I live a boring existence.
I was just in Kansas City, and I said to people, what's the big deal with the barbecue? We barbecue here. Then I went and had barbecue in Kansas City. Blew me away.
Thank you. Yeah, listen, I grew up in Kansas, went to school in Arkansas. There's just a handful of places, and it really truly is different. We go from here, and I know we're talking Nuggets in Portland, and, you know, after the game tonight, they leave tomorrow, or we leave tomorrow to fly all the way to Carolina, and it's a different kind of barbecue there. It's a more vinegary-based sauce, but yeah, Kansas City, Arthur Bryant's or Gates, whichever one you went to, is pretty good. If you're there a couple of days, you had to go to Stroud's because it'll be the best fried chicken you've ever eaten in your life.
I went to Joe's, the gas station.
Well, that's not bad either, but Eskimo Joe's or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. But if you get there again, go to Stroud's chicken, and instead of bread before the meal, they serve cinnamon rolls.
Ugh.
Well, dude, I'm telling you, it's unbelievable.
Hey, so you were born in Independence, and I know that's not far outside of Kansas City, but you're probably only like 20 miles, maybe 25 miles from Lawrence. Why did you choose Arkansas over Kansas?
Well, actually, that's Independence, Missouri. Independence, Kansas is south, probably 2 hours south of Lawrence.
Okay.
So I wanted to go to Kansas. That's where I wanted to play. I was... I mean, every basketball kid that grows up playing basketball in Kansas, at the time anyway, always wanted to go there. Probably like Indiana, they wanted to go to IU. And I was the player of the year in high school. My team won the state championship, and I remember talking with Ted Owen and the coaches there. And in fact, Lafayette Norwood, who was Darnell Valentine, the great blazer,
yeah.
Darnell Valentine's head coach in high school in there and went on to KU. Said that I was their, they had four scholarships and I was their fifth choice. And Arkansas wanted me from the get-go. They had just gone to the Final Four, with Sidney Moncrief and the triplets and went down there for a visit. The day I came back, was going to sign with Arkansas. KU decided to call and offer me a scholarship, but I'd already told Arkansas I was going, so I went to Arkansas. And it was great. I had a great 4 years at Arkansas, and Eddie Sutton, to me, is one of the great coaches in the world and should be in the Hall of Fame.
You probably look back and don't regret anything because you go on in the NBA, you win a championship with the Pistons, you have a nice career. But do people in Kansas, do they say, Scott, like, why didn't you – do you get asked that a lot?
You know, I tell you a funny story. We got time. My good friend who now lives in Denver, I got four or five buddies we hang out together that went to high school. And there's like five of us, six of us now. It's kind of grown because they said, what do you mean? Like, we get together for 4 or 5 days every summer and drink beer and tell stories? I go, yeah, that's all we do. Can I come? So our party's grown from, let's see, it started off with four. Last year we were at six, and we've had as many as seven, I think. But my buddy claims that I'm the reason that Kansas won a national championship. And it's really a funny way he gets about it. I don't go to Arkansas, instead of KU. Ted Owens doesn't recruit me, and so gets fired the year after I go to Arkansas because they stunk, and they wouldn't have stunk if I'd have been there. And because KU fired Ted Owens, they then hired Larry Brown, and because they hired Larry Brown, they were able to win an NCAA championship. So his 6 degrees of separation, had they recruited me the right way like they should have, Ted Owens would have never gotten fired. Larry Brown would have never came there, and they might not have won that championship.
And that the rest is history.
I feel like I could, and then one of my daughters went to school at KU, so I feel like I have contributed to the heritage, really, and the culture of KU basketball. And then you guys got the top along and crushed this past weekend. What a fantastic game!
Yeah, it was really interesting. And tell me if this holds up, this theory, because you had Kansas playing Oregon in Kansas City. It was red, white, and blue in the arena. Everybody was there to see Kansas win. I felt like Kansas had better players, but I felt like at some point, because it was another Elite Eight where they weren't getting to the Final Four, like in the second half, early in the second half, you could feel the crowd. And I wondered if the players were looking around the arena going, we're letting all these people down. I wonder if that pressure contributed to Kansas sort of playing tight and not being able to shoot.
I think for sure in the beginning of the game it did. And then I thought in the second half, that Oregon started thinking, oh, crap, oh, crap, oh, crap, we're going to win this, oh, crap, and they got tight.
Yeah.
And was so bad. I really do think that had KU hit one or two threes in that second half, Graham was, what, 0 for 7 or
yeah,
something like that?
Yeah, terrible.
If he had a couple open looks, if he hits a couple threes in that second half and been interesting, I think it would have been a different outcome. But, I don't know. I think there is pressure and it goes all the way up into the pros. Tonight, we can even relate it to tonight's game. I think, to be honest with you, the pressure of tonight's game is on Portland. That being said, I understand Portland has an easier schedule down the end, more home games, and Denver's got a lot more road games and all that entails. But this is still a home game, and Portland is still supposed to win it. That was a home game for Kansas, albeit not on their campus. It was a home game. They were supposed to win it, and there's meaning behind it. Now, whoever loses tonight, the season's not over. It'll be a bigger uphill challenge, obviously, for Denver, especially because of the schedules. But it's still one of those games where you're like, Portland doesn't want to lose it. I guarantee you both Portland and Denver are going to come in this game with the thoughts, we can't lose this game. And that being said, there's 8 games behind it. So I think there is something about pressure. It's being able to, and the one beautiful thing, Chris, that as I've gotten older and have gone to this league, you know, first as a player and now as a broadcaster, that I am just absolutely fascinated by, because the X's and O's stay the same. You know, we put out, you know, these new different fangled, the triangle this, the Princeton that, the motion this, the penetrating kick that, and it's all been done. It's just that someone coined it, got it going a little better, so everybody wants to do it. But it's all this is recycled stuff. I know the 3-point line and the analytics stuff is adding to it, but whatever. But it's still a game and still basketball in the psychology of the players. Watching Damian Lillard, and I, one of my favorite players in the league and a kid I got to call a couple of his college games when he was at Weber State, and to see him go, and I thought as a mature senior there, and to me a no doubt first-round pick, to now the guy that, you know, went as a rookie and then keeps growing and is snubbed by the All-Star games to who he is now. I mean, the psychology of the sport is what matters. And that to me, more than anything, the maturity and the growth that Damian Lillard has shown is to me the biggest key of why. And I know they're going to see Nurk Fever and he's come in and done all this. That's great. But to me, the maturity that Lillard has shown the second half of the season, maybe more so than any time of his career, is to me what the turnaround's been about. Because let's be honest, Portland's underachieved this year. They're supposed to win 47 games, and now they're turning it on. So people, oh, look at Portland, here they come. Well, Portland should be up there trying to fight to catch, you know, Houston for that third spot and hold off the Clippers for that fifth or whatever. That's where they're supposed to be, not down here messing around with eight.
Scott Hastings with us, former NBA player, NBA champion with the Pistons, now with the Nuggets as a analyst on radio. Scott, when do the Denver Nuggets want the eight spot? I mean, is that a goal? Do they, like, do you see it in their eyes the way the Blazers are talking about it right now?
Well, listen, I want to tell you how I feel, and I think the answer is yes, and yet I watched him play two nights ago, and you're like, dude, this is an important game. I know LeBron's not out there, and I know James Harden's not out there, and I know Paul George is not out there, but Anthony Davis is pretty good. I mean, he gets calls too.
Yeah.
And they didn't come and perform. And I call it fatigue, and not physical fatigue, because they're 24 years old. But it's the first time I thought I saw a team that was like, dude, how many more emotional games in a row? How many games do I have to be up for? They put two games they lost to Houston that were absolutely fabulous games, and they basically are the one possession games. They lose both of them, home and road. Then they come back and they got Cleveland, who just got in trouble for resting guys. So they said, okay, let's show the league something. Full force come out in Denver, and Denver manhandled Cleveland. I don't know if you saw that game.
Yeah.
They manhandled Cleveland. Then they go on the road, and until the fourth quarter, basically manhandled the Pacers, pushed them all over the court. And then they come back, and all of a sudden Boogie Cousins isn't going to play. And it's like, everybody, oh, this game's going to be easy, and they let down. So my hope is they learn something that, oh, yeah, we're in a playoff race and you can't do that. Once again, the psychology of the sport. Or there are a bunch of kids going, dude, this is going to be too hard. I don't know if we can do it. They've already overachieved. They've won more games than you know, all the wise guys in Vegas thought they'd win this year. So if you had Denver in the over, you're already going to get paid out, I guess. But, you know, I think opportunities are fleeting. I think you never know with injuries. You know, what looks good in July at draft time or June at draft time, sometimes just doesn't pan out. You guys know that as well as anybody.
Yep.
sometimes great futures lie ahead of us, and then an injury goes that just all of a sudden wrecks it. Denver knows that, losing LaPhonso Ellis, you know, at a time when they looked like they were the next team to come up. You guys with Roy, you know, all of a sudden here's a guy that's going to be a star for you guys forever, and then all of a sudden just the chronic knee problems. So, listen, be happy to get in. Don't worry about whether it's eight or whatever, because, listen, Portland ain't an eight seed if they get in there, and if Golden State takes it lightly, Portland can beat them. Denver can beat them if they take them lightly. So I just look at the opportunity. I hope their ideas that come in tonight and go, dude, this is going to be a blast. Portland's always a great crowd to play in front of. They're one of the best fans in the league. They respect and understand basketball. Let's go. So I'm excited about it. I think it'd be pretty cool.
Now, the barbecue in Kansas City, can I duplicate that at home, or do you have to be in Kansas City or Kansas to have good barbecue?
Well, the key is the quality of the, like, do you like pulled pork? Is that what you had the best?
Oh, man, the ribs were good. I went to Q39. I went to Joe's. I was like, you know, what's the big deal? And then I got in there, and it was a brisket sandwich that they served with onion rings on top of it. And
oh, yeah.
It was pretty good. Yeah.
See, I was going to wait till the press room tonight and eat, and you know how crappy that food's going to be. I'm thinking maybe I need to go find someplace here. Listen, it's about the quality of the meat that you get, the time of which it marinates and then smokes, because most of it is smoked. And that way it keeps all the juices, especially when you smoke it. And I don't know if you've ever, seen a real barbecue place, how they cook it in the brick stoves? And they basically start cooking it at like at 2 in the morning so they can serve it at you know, 2 in the afternoon or whatever
just
the next day.
Just falling off the bone.
Oh, it's unbelievable, man. Hey, well, maybe, hey, get back to Kansas City again. Get Oregon in there.
All right.
Tell me about your Final Four real fast. I think this is going to be one of the more fun Final Fours and interesting because of the stories. I love that you got your blue blood North Carolina in. And then the other three teams, some of the greatest stories, you know, whether it's coaches or players or last performances or, you know, 78-year championships ago, you know, whatever it might be. I just think, man, I think I'm excited about tonight, but I'm excited about next weekend, too.
All right. Scott Hastings. Thank you, sir.
All right, go Ducks.
There he is, Scott Hastings on the Denver Nuggets, the NBA playoffs, and how to make your brisket. I love that interview. Coming up, Punch It Audio, best sound from sports, plus Dan Dickow, Gonzaga star, former NBA player. He talks about Gonzaga and Oregon in the finals, plus on yesterday's Irregular Guys. Aaron Brooks had something interesting to say about Dylan Brooks. I'll play it coming up next.
Something is about to happen.
BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go. The bald-faced truth.
John Canzano.
John Canzano is on the game.
I gotta say I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the Pac West Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 102.9 and 750, The Game.
Tower of Radio is brought to you by First Call Heating and Cooling. Make them your first call for heating and cooling, air filtration. Look, we put a heating system and an air filtration system in our home. First Call Heating and Cooling put it in. And we could not be happier. You can jimmy jack around with other companies, but I'm going with a company that's been in Portland since 1939, and by the way, has done a great job at my house. It's my first call. Go to firstcallheat.com or 503-231-3311. That's 231-3311. I know a lot of people listen to this show, and I know because I was talking to my friend Rusty Houston before the show, and you'll hear me talking about him. He's a farmer's insurance agent. But Rusty was telling me about, he is advertising on this show, and he's also my insurance agent. So I was calling him on insurance business. But I said to Rusty, I was like, are you hearing from people who hear you advertising on the show? And he was saying, yeah. And by the way, like droves of his existing customers are like, oh, man, I heard you, you're advertising on Canzano's radio show. And I said, that's good. I said, it's good that even your existing customers are hearing it. So I know that there's like a huge audience out there, and I get the numbers and I see the podcast numbers. And ultimately, though, there comes a time in which Anna's driving the car and the 2-year-old's in the car as well. And man, she's like, Kiki, you spent some time with her. She's, yes. She's paying attention.
Yes, she is.
She knows Dad's on radio. And I guess I was talking about the brothel in the Raiders story in the first segment of the show. And she was listening.
Uh-oh.
Because Anna texted me and said, I have you know, the two-year-old is now saying, Bunny Ranch, Bunny Ranch.
You know, I did have the pleasure of spending some time with your wife and the kids this weekend.
Yeah?
Did Anna tell you that on my watch, Soji took a bit of a header off the...
No.
Yeah.
Was it the left side of her head? I noticed a bump on her head. I was feeling
I
her melon
remember.
The other day.
I was in pure panic mode. I thought I had it, all my bases covered, and she toppled right off. We were at this little gym, and...
Yeah, you got to pay attention.
I know. They half keep you on your toes.
Half of success in life is just paying attention.
I had a delayed reaction. It all happened so fast in my reaction. I was like, no, she's not. Oh, yeah, she's falling on her head.
Yeah.
But she recovered.
Kids are pretty resilient. Yeah. We had one of the oldest one went down the stairs one time, head over heels. Like,
doesn't
there's
that
no
just
way
take
they
your
survive.
Away?
There's no way they survive. Like, this is it. And then they're fine.
Yeah, they pop right up.
As, so far.
Yeah.
But yes, the two-year-old's running around yelling Bunny Ranch. So there you have it. All right. Let's do a segment now that includes all of the best sound in sports, and it includes yesterday on The Irregular Guys. Aaron Brooks was asked about Dylan Brooks, and I thought his answer was fascinating.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Start with Roy Williams. He was on the Dan Patrick Show earlier today, right here on 102.9 FM The Game. And 750. He says his program's got to focus on Oregon. He also says that Oregon reminds him of the Warriors. Punch it.
You know, I've got to get my team to focus on Oregon. Everybody's talking about, you know, going back for redemption and national championship. And I got to get my kids to understand we're not playing for a national championship. We're going there to play Oregon. And if we play well, you know, they may let us stay around and play another one.
Yeah. He's got to worry about Oregon because that's the thing that happens. If you're North Carolina in this game, if you're Roy Williams, and I think he's doing a good job of this, the thing you have to defend against is your guys who have been there before looking ahead. That's it. Oregon is dangerous. Oregon can beat North Carolina, and I think Roy Williams is aware of it. But the two things that I've heard him say since this matchup has been set is, number one, man, they're awful good, and we got to be on our game, right?
I see them play on TV in mid-January, and they reminded me of the Golden State Warriors. They reminded me of at that time. But with Bell and Brooks and those guys going up and down, they're athletic. They play this tough defense. They're really good.
They're really good, and they're really good. And by the way, you know, we've got to focus on them. That's the message that Roy Williams has to have. He's also talking about the bad ankles that he's got on his team. He's got a couple players that they're, you know, got ankle tweaks or whatever. I don't think that's going to be a factor in this game. I think both teams are going to show up to play. The bigger question is, we saw the Oregon Ducks flinch a little bit in the second half of the game against Kansas. They were looking around going, holy hell, we're going to the Final Four. Like, we can't believe we're going to the Final Four. You could see it on their faces. And Kansas, if they had played a little better, might have come back and won that game. Oregon can't afford to do that against Carolina. They can't start the game that way. They can't have five bad minutes. They can't play not to lose. They have to come in there and play to win and play like they belong. I think it's going to be a great game. I'm picking Oregon, but I think it's going to be a great game. Dana Altman doing what he should do on the other side of this. He's filling bags with sand. Punch it.
I think so. I think it does. You know, their players are experienced. They went to the final game last year. Coach Williams has been there, done that. This is a new experience for our players, for our coaching staff.
He's talking about Carolina's experience and whether or not that's an advantage. In Altman, everybody knows he's very conservative. In Tom Chattel, who writes a column in Nebraska for one of the newspapers there, wrote a column today in which he was talking about Altman. And it got me to thinking about something that I heard in the news conference and I wrote about. Altman, in the run-up to the Kansas game, made a joke about the Kansas team being the Chicken Hawks. I don't know if anybody caught that. He just kind of said, oh, you know, the Chicken Hawks or whatever. And it was as close to trash talk as you could get from Dana Altman. Like, this is the guy who's not going to trash talk anybody. But it also signaled to his players, I don't care. We're here. They've got a bunch of fans. They're the number one seed. It was kind of like a, I'm not afraid, you know, from a guy who at the front of the line should be telling his guys, don't give him anything for the bulletin board. And I know that Kansas, you know, they're not going to take chicken hawks as like a personal disrespect, but I just thought it was a little bit out of character for Dana Altman, but in a way that was calculated. Keep an eye on that, because I think what he's going to do is he's going to tell Carolina how great Carolina is in the next 48 to 72 hours. I think you're going to hear a lot of Dana Altman saying, Carolina's fantastic. They've got all the history. They've got everything. And yeah, Nick on Twitter is saying that I should pick North Carolina big, or I'm going to mess his bracket up. Nick, I'm picking the Ducks. You have to. If you want me to pick Carolina, I'll do it just for your bracket. But there you go. Aaron Brooks was on with the Irregular Guys, and you can catch those guys weekdays from 3 to 7 here on 102.9 and 750 The Game. Aaron Brooks was asked about Dylan Brooks. Here's an NBA player talking about Dylan Brooks as a possible NBA player. And when you watch Dylan Brooks' game, I said he's like a rhino running up and down the court. What does Aaron Brooks see in Dylan Brooks?
He's a winner, man. He's just a winner. You know, his game is kind of awkward. It took me a while to really process it, but like, he just gets it done. And he doesn't do anything that's, you know, out of him. When there's a big shot that needs to be made, he's there to take it. When there's a big pass that needs to be made, he's there to make it.
You know, I think that's a great thing. You know, you look at his game, it's a little awkward, right? It's just a little bit different, a little bit awkward, but he gets it done. And that's the thing. And somebody asked Dylan Brooks in Kansas City, are you okay if your career just amounts to you being a nice college player? And I think that that's an interesting distinction, that you have a guy who we all regard as a really good college player who may or may not have a really good NBA future in front of him, kind of in the prime of his college career. I think it's an accurate comparison that Brooks says that he sees Dylan Brooks as a guy who just gets it done. Is that enough in the NBA? I don't care this week, because this week I'm focused on, can Dylan Brooks, who has not been the best player on his team — I put a poll question up on Twitter. I said, who's been the best, most valuable player for the Ducks in this NCAA tournament? And it's split like 50-50 between Jordan Bell and Tyler Dorsey. And Dylan Brooks is a distant third. He's like getting Rand Paul numbers in that poll. And it's like, you know, can he, in a big moment, in a Final Four, have a game where he leads the team? Because I think that's what's not happened yet in this NCAA tournament. They haven't had Dylan Brooks put the Ducks on his back and go, we're going to the title game. We're going to the Final Four. He's played well. He's had good moments. But not all the way there. Not all the way. All right. Current Oregon women's basketball coach Kelly Graves is excited about the Oregon Ducks women's program, but they ran into UConn last night with a Final Four berth at stake. Punch it.
Truly extraordinary history that we're watching, Karen. Nothing's changed. This is the heavy, 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 heavy favorite heading into Dallas, and they're hitting on all cylinders.
There's your final score. UConn 90, Oregon 52.
Yeah, UConn pounded Oregon, reached the Final Four. Credit to Kelly Graves and the women's basketball team, but that's 111 in a row. And we've run out of comparisons in sports for this streak. Now that UConn has one win for every year of Bilbo Baggins' life. Yeah, that's written by somebody else. I'm not taking credit for that. But they're trying to win a fifth straight championship. Notre Dame is out, got beat by Stanford. Baylor, the other powerhouse, got upset by Mississippi State. Is it a foregone conclusion that UConn's going to win this thing? And by the way, when UConn played Mississippi State last year in the Sweet 16, anybody remember what happened? UConn 98, and as Jerry Allen would say,
nothing. Crickets.
It was 98-38. Kiki.
You know, I know. You know, the thing that bothers me about this, though, last night, I missed the first half. I was getting my tires rotated, so that was really fun. So I get home, and I turn on the TV, and they're up by 30, 35. Over. But they're still jacking up threes. and then the crowd is still like going crazy. And I feel like at some point, should you not take your starters out and have other people in and you know, take your foot off of the neck of your opponent when you're up by 35 in the fourth quarter?
I think you kind of got to be who you are. In youth sports, I would say so, but like they're, you know, and here's the thing. When you look at UConn and points scored and points allowed per 100 possessions over the last 5 or 6 years, they're now, the opponents are more competitive than ever against UConn.
Yeah.
So it's closing, although narrowly. It's nowhere near them losing yet.
Right.
But look, that, okay, the potential championship game with Mississippi State. Last year they beat them 98-38. You know what the score at halftime of that game was?
What?
61-12.
Yeah, I just, I don't know. I get it. They're good. I mean, honestly, you know, they were rebounding, and if they threw up a shot, it would go in. It's just, I don't know. I just don't think you should be stepping back and taking threes when you're up by 30-35 in the fourth quarter. I don't think it's a good look.
Weigh in on that, 417-7575. Is that UConn pouring it on, or does a champion need to be who they are, and why should I let up to let you save face? Let's kick that around at 417-7575. You know what today is? Today is the day where the Blazers possibly could take a step forward in landing the 8th spot, but it's also the anniversary. 25 years ago today, Christian Laettner, Duke versus Kentucky, NCAA tournament. Punch it.
A quick pass to half court and call a quick timeout so they can get in better shooting range.
There's the pass to Laettner. Puts it up. Yes!
That's an awesome call. And obviously a moment there where you've got everything you need in that broadcast. You've got the analyst kind of saying what everybody else is thinking as you're watching it. Listen to the analyst again. Then after the made shot call, I love that Vern Lundquist just lets it breathe. Listen again.
How big a game atmosphere was.
A quick pass to half court and call a quick timeout so they can get in better shooting range.
There's the pass to Laettner. Puts it up. Yes!
There it is. Just love it. Let it breathe a minute. You hear too many broadcasters, don't let that moment breathe, but great moment in NCAA history came on this day in 1992.
I think the thing that's interesting about that, if you remember, I believe it was like a week or two prior to that game, Duke lost to, I believe it was North Carolina, and they had a very similar setup. Grant Hill tried to throw it by the length of the court, and it went wide left. He had it was a terrible pass.
It was, so you got to practice at
so,
it.
And so he actually said to Christian Laettner, next time, I'll get it. And so if you, you know,
yeah.
So that, I think that even makes the story even better because they failed the first time when they tried to do this last second shot and then they nailed it, obviously, the second time.
LeBron James and the Cavaliers now find themselves in the 2 spot in the Eastern Conference. Boston has taken it over. LeBron says he's confident that they can turn it around. Punch it.
Right now, we're just not playing good basketball, so we're going to figure it out, you know, and I'm still confident in a bunch, confident that we can turn things around. But right now, it's not frustrating. Sometimes you just got to figure out as a veteran ball club and as a group that, you know, wants to do something special again. We got a couple of days until we get back at it.
Normally, I would say, you know what, man, that you lose by almost 30 to the Spurs. You better be worried. But he's right. Like, the NBA playoffs are so long and the regular season's so long. And I think these guys are human, and I think it's inherent in the scheduling, inherent in watching the teams play, that you see real ups and downs in the course of a season. And I do think they have the playoffs, given the playoff setup. Okay, we were talking about this yesterday, how many damn teams make the playoffs. It's ridiculous. But you've got time in the Eastern Conference, especially, for, you know, Cleveland to kind of iron out some things and start off by saying, look, it doesn't even matter if we're the 1 seed or the 2 seed. If Boston ends up winning the Eastern Conference, but you're talking about a playoff matchup with Indiana that Cleveland will win, then a second round matchup with, you know, you know, Atlanta or Washington or Toronto, and then, you know, having a final Eastern Conference Finals with Boston or Washington or whoever ends up in that spot. But you've got several weeks in the playoffs, plus the remaining couple of weeks of the season, 9 or 10 games, to kind of figure it out. And I think you're Cleveland, I don't think you overreact to this. I think you kind of just kind of say, look, we've got time to figure it out. We see the Spurs again, it'll be in the NBA Finals, and it'll be okay. Robert Kraft says it's nowhere near over for Tom Brady, and he's got some inside information on this. Punch it.
As recently as 2-3 days ago, he assured me he'd be willing to play 6-7 more years at the level he performed in. There's no one that would be happier than I.
I don't know if he has 6 or 7 more years. And I hate to be like the among the masses who are doubting Tom Brady, but I think he has 2 or 3 maybe at this level, at that game and the way it is. I just don't want to see Tom Brady go out like we've seen some other players go out. And I think the bigger question is, how long is Bill Belichick going to coach? Brady, Belichick?
I think they should go out together. They should just hold hands and skip out of the stadium.
How about if they ride a horse? There won't be any skipping as Belichick's like 80 years old.
With his hoodie.
On a horse. Both of them on the same horse. But who would be in the front position on the horse? Would Brady be in front? I think Belichick in the back or what? Cool.
Yeah, I don't know. The visuals, really. I'm still kind of stuck on the visual, but I don't know.
No saddle.
I don't know, but you want him to see, I would like to see him go out on top. You don't want to see like Kobe, who basically had
Willie Mays
crime tape around him for the entire season.
Yeah, Peyton Manning. I guess Peyton won a Super Bowl. What's up, Hefe?
I would like to see them go out, floating out on a hot air balloon that's just a little bit underinflated so it doesn't quite make it out of the stadium.
That's pretty good.
Caught in the lights.
That's pretty good.
Roger Goodell says he's disappointed for Oakland fans. We'll talk about that coming up. Plus, your phone calls. The UConn women are dominant. And I had somebody today say to me, you know what should happen? The winner of the NIT, the men's NIT, should have to play the UConn women. I'd watch that, but I wouldn't give the UConn women much of a shot of winning it. Am I crazy for saying that? And Kiki earlier raised a question. She said she didn't like the UConn women pouring it on, shooting threes against the Lady Ducks. Is that bad sportsmanship? Is it poor form if you're a champion, winners of 110, now 111 straight, to go full throttle trying to get to a Final Four? Or is that just how you do business if you're a winner? You tell me at 417-7575.
Yo, this is Ari Spears, not Mike Tyson, and you're listening to John Canzano on 750 The Game.
ReflexKnees.com, that's the website you need to know about. They are the knee experts. Like when you need your tires fixed, you go to a tire place, right? You want a burrito? You go to a burrito place. Knee problems? Don't go to a clinic that does everything. Go to somebody who's specializing. This is important stuff. You only have two of them, best case scenario. So make the best of it. ReflexKnees.com. That's where my case study is, and you can see what they've done for me. It's been a game changer. It doesn't just affect me. It affects the whole household. So give them an opportunity to change your game over. How amazing is this Belichick and Brady run? And Robert Kraft earlier, I played a clip where he said Brady's going to play 6 or 7 more years. Robert Kraft looking at Bill Belichick?
I hope he coaches till his 80s. I mean, I see Warren Buffett and Rupert Murdoch, and they're in their mid-80s, and they're performing at a pretty high level. So we got to keep Bill healthy.
Keep Bill healthy. It's different, though, in a locker room, isn't it? And isn't it a testament to the Belichick and Brady run? Like, are we looking at history? Will this ever be duplicated? You know, you can have Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan, Greg Popovich and Tim Duncan, Brady and Belichick. You tell me at 417-7575, what do you think of that? Plus, the UConn women, they blew out the Oregon Ducks in their Elite Eight matchup. And Kiki here on the show did not like the UConn women shooting threes and running it up. I look at it and I go, you know what? This is a championship caliber team. I don't want them to lower the bar. I don't want them to play down. I don't want them to be like, oh, let's be nice. Because I think it plays into the mentality in women's sports that, you know, with women, they would go easier on each other. Kiki, I want the competitors out there. I want UConn's best shot.
Right, but you see that across. It doesn't matter what sport you are, and, you know, male, female, you know, little kids, little Steves, little Sallys. I just don't like the idea of someone jacking up a three in late fourth quarter when you're up by 35 points, when you have the track record that you have. If I'm Gino, I'm going to probably at the beginning of the fourth quarter, I'm going to call a timeout and I'm going to let my seniors come off the court, let them get their standing ovation. I'm going to put some scrubs in that don't get the playing time or the recognition. And I get it. Maybe he does things different and he's the greatest and this, that, and the other.
Well, he has all the best players,
that
too,
right,
like 4 years running.
Right, but that doesn't mean that I have to like it. You know, I can accept it, but I don't have to like it, and I don't like that he does that, and I'm sure the Ducks didn't like that, and I'm sure all the teams that they've trampled over for the last 5 years don't enjoy it either.
17 turnovers by Oregon in the first half. That cost him the game, I think. Mike's in Portland. Let's go out to Mike. Go ahead, Mike.
You know, John, I am totally with you with the UConn ladies. I mean, you don't go out there just to play softball. I mean, if you're that good, then show it. I mean, that's what fans show up for. If you're going to bury him by 40, then bury him by 40. You know, I mean, a pitcher in the major leagues doesn't start throwing snow cones in the eighth inning when he's got a no-no going. He's going to go for it, you know. So I just don't understand that mentality, you know. It's like Pete Carroll's the same way. For Seattle, you know, I mean, we're going to punch it in. We're going to go for two, even though we don't need it. We're going to try anyways. So I don't think it's running up the score. It's just showing how good you are.
I'd like to see, I would like to see the UConn women play a men's team. And I know it's like, you know, Riggs and Billie Jean King all over again. I want to see it. I want to see how close are they. You know, it doesn't have to be the NIT champion. Give me, like, you know, Oregon State. You know, play UConn just as an exhibition. Like, and I know UConn would probably never do it because Gino would be like, hey, it tarnishes what we are. This isn't a sideshow exhibition. I need to see this, though.
Yeah, that'd be great.
How many WNBA teams could UConn beat? They could beat, I think, a significant number of them. Mike's in Portland. Well, Mike, welcome. What's up, man?
So, man, yeah, I want to just talk about this a little bit. First of all, I believe if you can't keep up, don't step up. And you also got to recognize that the UConn team has a championship game still left to play. So they have to send a message to the next team. So you can't do that by playing weak. So I don't believe in that. We're not playing for fun. We're playing for keeps here. And one last thing before I go. As far as the Ducks beating North Carolina, that dog ain't going to hunt, man, because those players are walking down the same hall that Michael Jordan walked down, Sam Perkins walked down, James Worthy walked down. So, man, they can't do nothing but win. So I just wanted to put that out there.
I don't know. They made 20 Final Fours. They have 5 national championships. They lose quite a bit once they get there.
Yeah, but they done been there, though. And Oregon... Man, Oregon is not going to win the game tomorrow. I mean, Saturday.
All right.
Trust me, they're not going to win. Do you
agree with Mike? 417-7575. And do you think history plays into it? I think there's a big part of why North Carolina and Oregon are in this game is because they both have veteran teams that played deep into last season's tournament. We saw Oregon flinch a little bit in the second half against Kansas and kind of do a, oh, wow, we're going to win this thing. North Carolina wants badly to get back to the championship game. I think that has more to do with it than I'm walking the same halls as Michael Jordan or James Worthy. I mean, you know, I stood at home plate in Wrigley Field. It didn't make me a better hitter because Babe Ruth played there. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, there's a little bit of history there. Kiki, he's calling you out, though.
I know, and I want to make crystal clear. I'm not suggesting that UConn play weak. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is I think most coaches, am I wrong here? Are most coaches, if you're up by 20, 30, 40, God, in Connecticut's kids' case, God, they could be up by 50.
They'd be up 60,
they would take
yeah.
some kids out and let the other kids play. In addition to that, I think it's foolish because if one of their star players gets hurt when they're up by 40, then you're going to look like a jackass. So I feel very strongly about this. You can disagree with me. That's completely fine. But I think it's a bad look, and I think it's bad for women's sports. I really do, because at the end of the day, it's demoralizing for the other team. And I think part of being great is being able to lift up all the other people that you're around.
Nafisa Collier scored 28 and had 12 rebounds. She was shooting threes late in this game. Gabby Williams, who's the 5'11" forward, she had 25 and 6. Yeah, I think you risk some injury. I do agree, though, with Mike's point. Like, they're there to send a message of dominance, because the minute, like, somebody's going to beat UConn, and it's going to be like that Mike Tyson, Buster Douglas mm-hmm. moment, where somebody knocks them out, and then a little bit of the shine's off them, because Gino Auriemma gets the best players. Why? Because they win and win and win and win. And when that crack in the mortar happens, and suddenly it's, Mississippi State or Stanford or somebody who's beat them, I just think there's a little bit of a, maybe a recruit goes, hey, maybe it's starting to end at UConn. Maybe what? And suddenly he doesn't get the best five players every
year. I'm glad, because, honestly, it's like it's easy. It's like, to me, it's like Durant going to Golden State. If you're a kid and you're going to go to UConn, wow, okay. I'd rather see a smaller school, a nice talent go to a smaller school and be competitive and give them a good run. I'm over the UConn thing. I can respect what they've done. It's amazing. It's incredible. It's all of that. But at the same time, don't shoot a three when you're up 40 late in the fourth quarter. I think you look like an ass.
Now, it's been 863 days since they lost a basketball game.
See, so I think it's pretty clear. I mean, the argument is, well, they need to send a message to let people know that they're dominant. The message has been received. We are all pretty well aware that they are a dominant team. I don't think we need to be reminded of that. I don't know, man. It just really bugs me.
Does it bother you? 417-7575. I liked watching Michael Johnson run or Usain Bolt run. I like watching, the best in the world at their thing. And it's why when the Olympics come on, I'm into it. Like, I'm seeing somebody do their best. I like dominant performances. I like watching UConn. Oregon looked like it didn't belong in that court.
Oh, absolutely.
17 turnovers early, too many points off turnovers, couldn't make any shots.
And you say it all the time. They were wide-eyed. I mean, it's a huge stage, and you're going up against UConn, which clearly we all know is a very dominant team. And so that's intimidating. That's in your head. So I don't fault Oregon at all. They got the yips. I think they had a great season. They have nothing to hang their head about. I think in the vast scheme of things, and I wonder, if the script is flipped and they're in a men's collegiate team was this dominant, would people feel the same way? Is it different because it's women? And so
is it boring because they win? Are they boring? Stanford beat them, in 2014. That's their last loss. Is it boring or is it great to see greatness? I think that's a question.
It is a question. I think it's a combination of both.
111 in a row. Let's go to Mike, who's in Portland. 417-7575. What's up, Mike?
Well, I heard you proposing you'd like comfort.
Can't hear you, man. I heard. Speak up.
I heard you say that you wanted to see the Oregon State Beavers men's team play them.
I want it.
John, that's maybe the dumbest thing you've ever said in your life.
I want to see it. I want to see how close they are.
Well, because it's a different game. It denigrates the women game. UConn women are great. They're really great. How many people they got that are going to throw it down right-handed, left-handed? I mean, it's a different game, and to put men and women in the same thing, go take a look at the Olympic records for women. Any year in the state of Oregon, you're going to have some high school boy that's going to surpass it. It's not a fair comparison, and to even put it out there,
silly.
No. All right, let's look at this. The 100-meter dash in the Olympics. I don't want to see Usain Bolt running against the women's champion. I want to see how far down the totem pole I have to go before UConn loses a game, or before, how competitive could they be against a bad college team? Is there no part of you that's even curious?
Well, it's not just curiosity. Willamette and Lewis and Clark would beat them. They've got 6'5" men that can jump a foot above. The slowest guy on the men's team is faster than anybody they have.
I don't know, man. I've seen them up close. They're 6'5" as well. You know, they go 6'4", 6'5" as well. And they're good. These are good players. I'm not saying that Kansas or Carolina or Kentucky or Oregon or Gonzaga. I'm not comparing the Elite Eight in the men's bracket to the elite team in the women's bracket. I'm saying, how far down the totem pole in men's basketball do we have to go before we get a competitive game with UConn? Could we go out of the 351 men's college teams? Is the caller suggesting that none of them, UConn could beat none of them? I don't buy that. Billie Jean King, Bobby Riggs, I don't buy it. What do you got, Hefe?
I'm looking here at the record for the fastest 100-meter dash. Florence Griffin for women, 10.61.
Flojo.
And for men, you were looking at just about 1 second earlier, Usain Bolt, 9.58. So 10.61 for women, 9.58 for men. Almost exactly a second.
All right. So how far down in college athletics, what's the NCAA champion running in the men's 100? What's the high school national champion running in the men's, in the boys 100? You see, that's where I'm trying to draw a comparison of, I know that men have equal age and equal status in the sports world are probably going to beat the women's teams in a sport like basketball. It's going to happen. But at what point, you know, the high school state championship, I think UConn women would beat the high school champions in most states. What about the small college champions? Yeah, I think those are games. So I want to see, Oregon State's a bad men's college team. Could the UConn women beat them? Would it be close? Would they lose by 10? I'd love to see it. The caller's right about this, though. UConn would never do it. And they would say it disrespects us, and it disrespects the women's game. But I'm just saying, out of curiosity, I need to know what this means.
Okay, here's an even crazier question. If that were to happen, and it would never happen, but if it were to happen...
At the Moda Center?
Sure.
Saturday night?
Let's really go crazy with this hypothetical. Yeah. UConn women take on the Oregon State men, and the UConn women are up 40 in the fourth quarter, and they're shooting threes.
Yeah, stick it to them.
Would I still be upset? And I think I would be. I would still be upset.
You'd be in the front row going,
I don't think so.
You got yours.
No, I don't think I would. I'd be like, there they are. They're doing it again.
Here's the other thing. People are saying, I had a guy this morning. I was in line at Starbucks, and he said, hey, I was watching the news last night, and they brought on the Oregon women, and they said, the Oregon women lost to UConn. It was just a very small story. They showed a little clip. And then they went, and then the men's bracket, and they made a big deal about the Final Four. He said, how come that's not fair? How come the women aren't getting as much attention as the men? And I said to him, look, the bottom line is, look, it's true. The women in college basketball are never going to get the ratings, never going to get the stage, never going to get anything that the men get. The revenue points to that, though, too, because when you look at the Oregon men's basketball program and the Oregon women's basketball program, do you know what the ticket sales that the Oregon women's basketball program, the fiscal year 2017, brought in? $175,000. Do you know what the ticket sales of the men's basketball program brought in at Oregon? $2.5 million. There's the comparison in revenue. And I know when I write about the women's basketball programs, it'll get 1/15 the traffic that the men's columns get. It doesn't mean I'm not going to write about them, but it means, like, on yesterday's show, we wanted to talk about the Oregon women's program. And you know how we did it? We did it through the lens of bringing the college reporter on who's covering the team, and he's paying for it on his own dime, because I was worried that some parts of this audience were going to go, I don't care about the Oregon women, and just kind of tune out. So I'm trying to hold interest while talking about something that interests me, while saying, well, how can I make this most interesting to the majority of our audience? And but you know, yesterday was about talking about that poor kid who's paying his own way to go cover that team. I still want to know what would happen if the UConn women played a men's team. Dave's in Aloha. What's up, Dave?
Free with DC. I don't think it's right to run up the score. Whatever happened to teaching integrity, sportsmanship, values, core values, and society? Like you say, the risk of the injuries and stuff, it's not worth it. That's kind of like a slap in the face to Oregon. They're so good, they know they're going to win. They don't have to run it up like that. The in-your-face statement to everybody else, I think, is baloney. Sorry, John, but that's what I feel.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think I want their best shot. I don't want anybody to go easy on anybody else. And when you've won 110 in a row, you know, you risk, like, hey, if we let up...
But
what if they come back and
everybody
lose?
Everybody does that.
What if
it's
they
no
lose
different.
It?
Men or women, children, dogs, cats, everyone in the fourth quarter, if you're up by 40, just coast downhill.
Maybe they were trying to coast. Maybe Maybe they're that good.
Shout out to Dave and Aloha. Thank you, Dave.
She's going
to
get a tattoo, Dave and Aloha.
All right,
Dan Dickow, Disco Danny. Dan Dickow, I'm going to ask him about that next. How would a women's team like UConn fare against men? I'll ask Dicko about it. Plus, we're going to talk Gonzaga in the Final Four at long last.
I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
John Canzano is on Sports Radio 750, The Game.
Okay. Here we go.
The bald-faced truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 102.9 and 750, The Game.
Eight seconds and counting to end a generation of frustration. 1 second left, and that'll do it. The 20th trip to the NCAA tournament nets the first Final Four for the Gonzaga Bulldogs. Gonzaga, the first Final Four in school history, knocking off Xavier 83-59. And the Bulldogs are in Phoenix. The Final Four beckons for the Gonzaga Bulldogs.
That's quite a call there. That was very, very royal. Dan Dickow. Disco Danny, former Gonzaga player, former NBA player, friend of the show, college basketball analyst, smart guy, father, husband. What else, Dan Dickow? What are you?
Busy right now. it's a good busy. Being able to get down and travel down to the first Final Four for the Zags is awesome. Had a lot of media requests, which I'm happy to take part of because it's such a great story, and to be able to share a little bit more to a lot of people across the country has been a lot of fun.
You really were my first introduction to Gonzaga basketball in a tournament. I watched you play. What were your memories from being in the tournament, and what were the expectations back then?
You know, the expectations when I was there, my first year playing for Gonzaga, was, hey, they're just coming off an Elite Eight and a Sweet 16. Why not us? Why can't we make a run? We want to keep this thing going. And, you know, we were overlooked in the seeding process, even though we won our conference tournament. We ended up drawing Virginia, and obviously them being from the ACC, everybody was like, oh, Zags are going home. The Cinderella story's over. And we had different plans. We went out and we played well. And actually, I had a shot blocked with a layup blocked with maybe about 6 seconds left. And Casey Calvary, again, saves the day with a putback. He gets the putback, and we got great defensive stop on the last possession, and we moved on to face Indiana State, who we then beat. But then we ran into an absolute buzzsaw in Michigan State, and that was a Michigan State that had Zeebo, the freshman, Jason Richardson.
Mateen Cleaves,
We had no answer for those guys. They were just way too big for us.
Dan Dickow with us. Gonzaga getting to a Final Four. I hear the word validation thrown around. Did Mark Few and Gonzaga need this?
I think to all the, I hate to throw this word around, ignorant critics, yes. Because, you know, unfortunately in this day and age, people always, they, they find something to nitpick about.
Yeah.
But anybody who truly follows college basketball and understands just how hard it is to make, let alone one NCAA tournament or two back-to-back, and make, you know, multiple runs, to see that they've done this now 19 years in a row. If you were going to kind of hang your hat and say, hey, they're not good enough because they've never been it, then I just don't think you understand college basketball. I mean, you have to be good, and which they have been unbelievably well over the last 19 years, but you also have to catch some breaks going your way to make a Final Four.
I heard people on the East Coast say that a Gonzaga-Oregon final would be a nightmare for CBS, and I'm like, I don't care. If the best college basketball in the country is being played in the Northwest, then let's just why wouldn't you watch that?
Absolutely. You know what I say to that? Fine, don't watch. You know what? Then the next time both those teams are situated to make a deep NCAA tournament run, which by the looks of it, both programs are set up pretty well for the next few years, you know what? Then we'll just have to keep proving it, because I'm right there with you. I do like Carolina, but the way that Dana Altman's got those guys playing, especially since Boucher went down with an injury, which I think I came on your show and I was concerned about it, they've looked great, and you got to give them a ton of credit. I mean, it's been fun to watch them, too.
Tyler Dorsey's interesting, and we'll get back to Gonzaga in a second, but let's focus on that Carolina-Oregon matchup. Dorsey's interesting because he didn't have any games this year in the regular season where he scored 20 points in back-to-back games. He's now done it in seven straight, and in a way where, like Kansas was saying, we're not going to let him beat us, and then he scored 27. You were that kind of player where you could, rise to the moment. What is that like as a player when you're playing and you know the other side's gaming for you?
Well, I think what happens is you get on a roll like what he's on now, and you've got a lot of confidence, and you kind of just get the, a swagger about, you know what, these guys can't stop me. You know what, let's see what they got. And so you've got a confidence about it, but then you also have like a challenged mentality. So a lot of guys, when you're challenged, you're either going to face up and rise it, or you're going to kind of shrink back down. I always love to be challenged, and that's what it's looking like with Tyler Dorsey. He sees that he's being challenged, and he loves that. So he's facing it head on as opposed to just kind of shying away from it, which you have to love seeing that from a college kid.
The Oregon-Kansas game was a little bit surprising, but late in that game, we saw Oregon kind of playing not to lose. Are you at all concerned that they get to the Final Four and they look around and go, holy hell, we're in the Final Four, and they're a little wide-eyed?
I would expect that, honestly, to come from Oregon, Gonzaga, and South Carolina. You know, maybe that first, up until the first media timeout where they just kind of look around like, whoa, we are here. You know, and that's where North Carolina of all these four teams has the advantage, because they're there every year, and they were in the championship game last year. So they know a little bit more what to expect when it comes to the media obligations, when it comes to the open practice, and just the spectacle of playing in front of, 60,000 people. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to affect them too much.
Gonzaga and Mark Few, this team, a lot of people looking at them saying they're the team to beat. What do you see?
I'm right there with you. I agree with it. I absolutely do. You know, I think defensively, there's a reason they're statted out as the most efficient and most dominant defensive team in the country. They got Shemek Karnowski guarding the entire lane. They got bigs with Jonathan Williams, Zach Collins, Killian Tilly, who can block shots, protect the rim. Those three guys can switch out on a perimeter if there's a need. And then their guards, I don't think, get enough credit defensively. Silas Nelson's their best defender from Portland at Jefferson High School. But, those other guards are very good, and they're very underrated as far as how they slide their feet, stay in front, and make you score up over the top. And that's a hallmark of any good defense. A lot of times it doesn't come down to gambling and creating steals. It comes down to staying in front and making guys take contested, difficult twos. Because if you look at the numbers, if you do that, you're going to win more games than not.
South Carolina is playing great basketball, but I see them as the least talented team of the four. Am I being a fool there?
I don't think so. Tendarius Thornwell is very good. I think Dozier has really opened a lot of eyes over the NCAA tournament. But, I mean, there's a reason a team has 10 losses on the season. You know, I mean, yes, they're from a difficult conference. And they're challenged throughout the year. But at the same time, I mean, let's call a spade a spade. If you looked at all four rosters, you would say, yes, that is the least glamorous roster as far as how NBA prospects look or first glance if you watch them play. But that being said, Thornwell is pretty stinking good, and he can carry a team on his back.
In the Gonzaga-South Carolina game, I'm assuming you like Gonzaga. In Oregon-North Carolina, are you picking?
I'm picking Ducks. I got to go with the Ducks. I mean, I can't say enough good things about Dane Altman. I think he's an unbelievable coach. I think he's been underrated nationally for so long. So being from the Northwest, it's really cool to see him get a lot of credit. You know, me personally, I'm not a huge Dylan Brooks fan, but I think he is an unbelievable talent at the college level. I think he's a matchup nightmare. Jordan Bell is a great player to me. I think the key for Oregon is going to be Peyton Pritchard and Casey Benson. You know, you've seen those other guys make plays throughout, but if Peyton Pritchard can knock down some jumpers and make some plays by getting in the paint off the bounce for guys, and then if Casey Benson can just make some outside shots and keep the defense honest, you know, his ability to just be efficient on the offensive end is really going to be helpful.
Dan Dickow, our guest. Dan, before I cut you loose, I mean, it's, you know, you go to college, you go on to the NBA, you have a nice career, you've got a lot going on for yourself, and this stuff comes back up all the time with Gonzaga. Did you kind of know and expect that would happen because of what a special place Gonzaga is and how connected you will always be to it?
No. You know, going through it years ago, you know, you just want to be appreciated. You want to be appreciative of the moment that you're in, but you also want others to kind of appreciate the part you play at that particular time. You know, I would never have thought that, you know, I would be one of the guys that would have a lot of media requests this particular week to kind of, you know, talk about the impact of this Gonzaga program in the Spokane community, as well as, you know, kind of the national outlook of what it might be and how to kind of really share what Gonzaga is all about to people. But, you know, I love it simply because Gonzaga was so good to me, and it still is, that I can't do anything but have great things to say about that program with Coach Few and the city of Spokane, because I love it up here.
Why do you think Mark Few stayed there?
He wouldn't have left unless he truly felt he had a chance to win a Final Four and win a national championship. I mean, he's had everybody come after him, Kentucky, Indiana, UCLA, Arizona, Oregon, obviously, before they hired Altman. But he loves living in Spokane. His family is situated and entrenched in this community. And he's always wants a chance to win and win at the highest level. And if you look at all those other places, pretty much all of them were rebuilding jobs at the time.
Yeah.
And now a lot of those programs have done a great job of doing it, Altman and Sean Miller and Alford, even though he's had some hiccups. But why give away your lifestyle and what you like to do in life to build something up to maybe be at the point that you're already at somewhere?
Yeah.
That's kind of the end factor for him.
If he can win, I mean, he's made a Final Four, so he's kind of proved himself right, hasn't he?
Absolutely. I personally loved his monkey comments after the press conference the other day. I mean, he's just got such a dry, sarcastic sense of humor that not a lot of people get to see, and it was perfect.
Do you think he felt that there was a monkey on his back, or do you think he was just saying that because he hears it from other people?
No, I think because he hears it from other people. I mean, we've had a number of, you know, conversations when I'm at practice and different places, and, you know, he makes the comments about people don't understand the process it takes to have a good year, let alone a great year, and make a deep NCAA tournament run. And if so many people were able to kind of take a closer peek into college basketball programs, I think there would be a lot less speculation from people of just how easy they think it really is.
Dan Dickow. All right, Oregon Gonzaga play in a championship game. Can you pick anybody but Gonzaga?
I can't do that. Come on, John. I know. I know you're down in Portland. But
I think people understand.
Zags over Ducks.
Yeah, I think people will understand that.
If by chance it happens that Oregon's in it and Gonzaga's not, my allegiance is full on for the Ducks. But if Zags are there, absolutely not. Zags are going to win.
It's interesting because I was looking around this morning and I was thinking, okay, the best, you know, if you count victories as being the best college basketball historically has been, you know, it's been Carolina, Kentucky, Duke, and Kansas. And I look at those programs. They're not in major metropolitan areas. They've built it with great coaching and great culture. And now, of course, they're making money. Those programs are making $30 million a year. But why not Gonzaga? Why not Oregon? What, you know, as you make cases for where could the best basketball in America be played?
You're right. I mean, that observation is spot on. And that's the exact question that Coach Few continued to pose to himself as well as his assistants years ago. When him and Dan Monson were assistants coming up under Fitzgerald, they're like, why not us? Why can't we do this? I mean, now it's hard to imagine all the obstacles that they had to overcome just to get to the first NCAA tournament and then grow it into what it is. But you're exactly right. I mean, why does a college basketball power have to be in a major media market? It's not. And the four programs you just named are proof. You know, the other kind of program that shows you that you're right on is Arizona. You know, if you look at some of the other quote-unquote mid-majors, you can look at, you know, Wichita State and what they've done over the years, Wisconsin, what they've done over the last 10 years, Michigan State, same thing. I mean, there's just so many things that people don't understand, and they think you have to be in a New York market or they think you have to be in a L.A. market to really kind of get a lot of attention. I think it's funny.
Dan Dickow, we'll let you go. I really appreciate your time and everything that you do.
Appreciate you too, John. Hopefully I'll see you down at the Final Four.
I will see you there. All right, Dan Dickow, great stuff, great context. I'll always remember Disco Danny running around the court with long hair, you know, running around, everybody's looking at him. He look, compared to some of the other players, he looks scrawny. And you're like, these guys? And then they just went out and kicked everybody's ass and were dangerous. And then it was like, oh, they're a nice first and second round story. And now we suddenly see what Mark Few has built. And you're going to hear a lot of myth between now and Saturday about Mark Few and Oregon's interest in Few. And it really stems from the relationship that Pat Kilkenny, Oregon's number two booster behind Phil Knight, the relationship he has with Few. He is very close with Mark Few. Supports Gonzaga basketball. Maybe you don't know that. As Dana Altman was cutting the nets down, Few was telling me, Kilkenny was telling me that, you know, we got a chance to get Mark Few and Dana Altman in a championship game. And at that point, who is he going to root for? And maybe it's a foregone conclusion that you all think that Kilkenny would root Oregon. I think he would literally be split and divided in a way that was, you know, And let's be real, when the job opened up, when Ernie Kent was fired, Mark Few was the guy Pat Kilkenny had targeted for the job, wanted for the job. You may have heard Brad Stevens or Jamie Dixon or Tom Izzo mentioned. It was Few, first and foremost, that Kilkenny was like, are you sure you don't want this job? Because, you know, and I think there's just great poetry in the Oregon Ducks being there while Few's there for the first time. Like, he could have left Gonzaga. Like, if Gonzaga hadn't got there, if you'd be sitting back today going, should I have taken that job? I could have got to the Final Four. Could have had a chance at the championship. Did I blow it? And instead, he's looking over going, I made the right decision, and so did Oregon. And that is a big distinction. You're going to hear, too, that Dana Altman is the sixth choice at Oregon behind Jamie Dixon and Brad Stevens and Tom Izzo and Mark Few and at least one other coach. Kilkenny tells me that's not true. I wrote about it over the weekend. He says that Tom Izzo and Jamie Dixon were the only two coaches that he talked terms with before coming to Dana Altman. Everybody else, he didn't offer the job to the other guys. But Izzo and Stevens, they were offered the job and turned it down. So Dana Altman, not the sixth choice. He was the third choice for the Oregon Ducks. And he still got the job and has arrived at a Final Four in his moment of truth. All right, coming up, Kiki's going to read the news. That's in front of us.
Hey, it's Norm McDonald. You're listening to The Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Are you looking for a new vehicle? You're looking for a car? It's a big decision. If you are looking for a car, give Gresham Ford an opportunity to win you over. Gresham Ford, that's the car dealership with a heart. And by that, what we mean, Bess Wills and her team. She's just a great culture over there at the Gresham Ford dealership. She's got employees that have been there like 15 or 20 years. Not just one, like multiple employees. One of her employees even got married at the dealership. Like, that's how you know people feel good about where they work. And no slap on Alpha Media, but, you know, ain't no people getting married over here. There's people like, oh, I want to hold my ceremony at work. What I'm saying is people love to work for her. They love to do business with her. So if you're going to look for a new or used vehicle, get yourself over to Bess. Her son works at the dealership. It's a family thing. Go see her and see her online at GreshamFord.com. She's also at 1999 Powell Boulevard in Gresham. Go over there and say, hey, Canzano sent me. I want to see Bess. Give her a handshake. I guarantee you she looks you in the eye. And I guarantee you walk away going, that's a different transaction at an automobile dealership. No knock on the other guys, but there's nobody getting married at those other dealerships going, I love this place so much, I'm going to get married here. No, that's not happening. Kiki's here, and when she's here, she reads news.
Ladies and gentlemen,
stand by for news.
This is Kiki Reads the News on the Bald-Faced Truth.
You want to get married over here at this radio studio?
I think I'll take a pass. I mean, let me think on it a little bit more. Maybe my caller Dave from Aloha, he backed me up today. Maybe
that's all somebody has to do to win your favor.
That's pretty much.
Back you up.
His heiress, Michael Jordan, is set to open his first Portland area restaurant next month. Michael Jordan's steakhouse will be inside the $510 million Alana Casino in Southwest Washington. The 300-seat restaurant will serve prime, dry, aged steaks, comfort food, and local seasoning or local seasonal favorites. Casino operators hope that it opens in April. That was the target date. No word yet if they're on schedule, but it's right there in Ridgefield, Washington. Take exit 16. So if you've ever been to La Center,
how far
right,
away is that?
From here to the studio?
Is that where those other casinos are?
It is. So it's interesting to me because you take that La Center exit, you take a right, and you go, you know, to the casinos that are there now.
I almost shut down one of those casinos. I had a good run over
there.
Did
you?
Yeah. I almost own it.
The New Phoenix, I think.
Whatever
they have.
That place was. You
Chips.
Were there.
Oh, I've been there. I've been there a few times. So.
You were there the night I brought down the house.
Yeah.
It was bringing down the house.
Willy-nilly.
I had to go change costumes and come back and play blackjack later because they
with
were
your
like
glasses and a nose.
Sir,
on.
We need you to leave.
Yeah. So that's a really cool thing. New facility up there. Again, when you take that La Center exit, the new casino, you take a left and it's about a mile down the road. Old casinos, take that exit, you take a right. So
are those old
way,
casinos just going to die
I
now?
I know. I was like, seriously, you have to do it right next to them. So anyway, if you're a gambler and you want to have a good steak, La Center, exit number 16.
Does Michael
off
Jordan
I-5.
Make a good steak, though?
I have no idea.
If I want to see a guy dunk, yeah, Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I mean? Doesn't he need to stay in his lane?
It's always interesting to me when athletes do this. I remember back in the day when I was living in Chicago, Oprah opened a restaurant, and it wasn't open for very long. It wasn't, you know? It's like, but you're right, stay in your lane. So I'll be interested to see what happens with this place. It seats 300 people, so that's a pretty big restaurant,
like,
isn't
do
it?
I want to see, like, Emeril play basketball? You know?
No, but I think there's something about the idea that you're eating something that he ate, or it's almost like you're going to a concert and you're breathing the same air as that entertainer. It just gives you like that.
Mm.
It's that false sense of security.
I know where you're going.
Don Shula has a steakhouse.
All right.
You know? I didn't go there. In other news, Florida softball coach, this guy has me shaking my head. Tim Walton and an Auburn player got into a bit of a shoving match. That's right. Albeit small, but it was a legitimate shoving match yesterday after the game. So here's what happened. Florida coach Tim Walton, back in 2012, coached the shortstops of Auburn's sisters in 2012, kicked those girls off the team.
Let's start over.
Okay?
Let's just start over.
History.
So the sister...
Okay.
The Auburn shortstop has two sisters for the Florida coach.
Correct.
Okay.
I got that messed up, didn't I?
Yeah.
All right. Are we all...
So there's some family history there. And he kicked them both off the team.
Kicked them both off the team. This is back in 2012. So last night after the game, they go through the line to slap hands and say good game. And as the Auburn player approaches that said coach, Mr. Walton, she brings her arm down because she doesn't want to shake his hand.
Yeah.
And so he gives her a little nudge on the shoulder.
Give her the business.
He did, which I could not believe with my own eyeballs.
I'm right here, buddy.
And
that's
she
what he was
turned
saying.
Around and kind of gave it right back to him, shoved him in the back as if to say, what the hell did you just do? And then some heated words were exchanged. It was a pretty intense situation. She was fired up. She was really fired up. He has since apologized. He says that he was just trying to slap her hand. It wasn't there, which then resulted in him touching her shoulder. I've watched the video a couple of times. I don't buy the story. It's kind of like yesterday's story with the alligator and the golf ball. I didn't buy that. I don't buy his story.
He's apologized now.
Yeah, I think it's because he looks like an idiot. So I would apologize, too.
You think he was mad because he lost the game?
I think there's serious bad blood between that player and that coach. And I think he lost. And I think he took a shot.
Shake hands at the end of the game?
I don't know.
What is that about?
I don't know.
Nobody wants to be there.
But you saw the video. Do you think he did it on purpose?
2-4-6-8. Who do we appreciate?
No one.
Auburn, go. And then go to your own dugout. No need to handshake. When I was 12, Tommy Lujan punched a kid in the face. The lines were never the same for me after that. It was an all-star game in baseball, and we were going through the line, and we'd lost the game, and I'm right behind Tommy Lujan, and this other kid, the starting pitcher in the other team, was kind of coming through the line, smirking at everybody, and Tommy just decked him. And
yeah, I had a bad experience once when I was going through the line. I was the only girl on a team, So suffice it to say, for the remainder of the season, my male, obviously, co-players and whatever, the rest of the team, and then my coaches would basically kind of protect me. But you saw the video. Do you think he did it on purpose?
I mean, you can never tell intent. I got to read his mind. She didn't have her hand up the whole way through the line.
Right.
So I wondered if it bothered him that she wasn't shaking hands with everyone. I think you had to be intentional to reach out and hit her in the shoulder like that, because the hand would have been higher.
Yeah.
So I don't think it was like, oh, I missed your hand and I hit you in the shoulder. I don't buy that. But I think he saw her and said, she's not shaking everyone's hand. I'm going to give her a little business.
Yeah, he gave her the zhuzh. So anyway, I thought it was a bad scene, and it was mildly entertaining. She was pretty fired up. She immediately turned around and kind of shoved him in the back. And when I say shoved, it's not a big shove. She's just kind of definitely making herself aware to him that, hey, that's not cool. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. So, and Easter is just around the corner. And so this is a public service, basically, for people to be careful during the Easter egg hunt. Because last year, a Portland woman, it can be a melee. You've seen these kids and adults going
It's mostly the adults. Let's be real.
So listen to what
You've
happened.
You've been out to Alpenrose?
No, I haven't.
The adults, they have to make an announcement. The adults, this is for the kids, whatever, because the adults run around and grab the eggs.
So?
It's terrible.
So this is what happened last year.
Humanity.
A Portland woman took her kid, who was 4, and her niece, who's under 4, to go to this Easter egg hunt.
Okay.
And the way that they do it is they have, you know, the little Steves and the little Sallys go first, and then the next age group, and then the next age group up. So it's the first group, it's the little kids, and they blow the horn for everyone to go. And melee ensues, and all the other big kids decided to go after these eggs. This woman got knocked down, and she tore her meniscus and partially tore her ACL. She is now suing the organizer of the event because she had to have surgery and all this kind of stuff. $112,000 is the lawsuit. But
welcome to America.
Yeah. So anyway, be careful with the Easter egg hunt. Things can get crazy, so just be aware of that, people. Be nice to one another.
It comes back to...
Just be normal.
Why are you knocking people over for an egg?
Why are you running out there at all? Like, why are you, you know what? Most of the parents will sit back at an Easter egg hunt and they'll watch their kid or take a picture or whatever. You go, I went out there to Alpen Rose one time for the Easter hunt, okay? And they made the announcement, no, parents, you're not allowed. This is for kids only. And they do it by age because they want the little kids to be on certain areas. And I watched the parents violate the rules and run out there. They weren't necessarily shoving other kids out of the way. But you can be intimidating if you're a parent and there's a five-year-old trying to pick up the egg and you want your five-year-old to get it. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, you can play a little defense.
You're going to do a little moving screen there.
Set
if you
a
will.
Pick. Yeah. So I saw it and I just went, you know what, man? I don't need this drama. I don't need this stress. I'm going to end up fighting a bunch of parents out on some little league field.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was that's a bad deal.
Should be allowed to shoot them with paint guns or something, like to mark them. Just mark them.
But do the kids realize? Look, I don't have kids, but how on a scale of 1 to 10, Easter versus Christmas, does it even? I mean,
well,
Easter Bunny versus
the
Santa?
Birth of Jesus, big deal. The resurrection, that's kind of a big deal too.
I understand,
so you're talking about just like the present part of it.
Yeah, a kid through the kid's eyes.
As a kid, I think Christmas was a bigger event. Mm-hmm. Gliss, you've got a pack of kids in your house.
I don't even think it's close. I think Christmas is way bigger.
You don't know how to do Easter at your house, apparently.
Oh, we know how to do Easter. Come on now.
Do you do a hunt?
Yeah, we actually do it.
Does the Easter Bunny bring eggs and hide them?
Yeah, of course he does.
There you go.
Yeah, we do it with the grandparents. We actually do like a whole big family thing.
Does the Easter Bunny bring gifts?
At times, he has.
I wondered, because some families have tradition where the Easter Bunny at some families will bring gifts.
Mm-hmm.
We have kids who listen to the show, so sorry, parents.
Yeah.
Ruining it. Like the Easter Bunny.
Help them out a little bit.
I think if the Easter Bunny brought a gift, just something, then in addition to the egg hunt, the Easter takes on a bigger role in your household.
Yes. I'm clearly not suggesting it's the same, but I do see the wide-eyed. The kids get pretty excited about that. But
Easter Bunny, I would like a flat-screen TV this year.
Yeah. You know what my friends do is they have a craft night, essentially, and they take probably 2 or 3 dozen eggs. They hollow them out, and then they put confetti inside the eggs. And then we all go outside, and we take the eggs, and we smash them over each other's head, and it's kind of a big little confetti.
Is there alcohol
kind of
involved in this?
No, it's good, clean family fun, man.
I had an aunt who had the biggest heart. She's a great aunt, but she had a big heart, man. She made Easter a big deal for us as kids. She would have a Easter egg hunt at her house. She had about 5 acres. Okay, she would spend like months, I think.
Oh wow,
putting this together, because when we went to her house and we showed up, there were eggs everywhere. She'd put money in the eggs.
Ooh.
She'd put whatever. And that became a big deal, going to her house. Pretty cool.
Awesome. So awesome.
You need an aunt like that.
We all need good aunts. In the world of weird news, I don't even know how to introduce this story, but I'm just going to say it. There are places where you can do naked yoga. So let that sink in for a second. I don't do yoga in general. I don't do hot yoga.
Yep.
And I really would not do naked yoga. But organizers and yoga teachers who do this class say that it helps people get over their body issues, any insecurities. Maybe if you're feeling insecure about your body, that it's a borderline of, I guess, I almost said sexual, spiritual experience.
Well, yeah, that too.
That too. But I have to say, I would definitely take a pass on this.
I'm not gonna go that far yet. Will they let you observe a couple classes before?
Can you imagine, like the people walking by the studio?
Let's go in and check it out. You know, never. Here's the thing. I can tell you right up front. It's never the people you want to see do naked yoga who are the people who are doing naked yoga. It's like Naked and Afraid, the TV show. It's bad bodies.
Yeah, you know? It's like when you go to the sauna You know, that's like a totally different, you know, you go to the sauna and you see people that are being extremely comfortable with themselves and kind of acting like they're the only one in the sauna. That makes me really uncomfortable. I don't, you know, so I can't imagine if you have
a group
of people.
It's just the wrong person Kiki.
Clearly.
If it's like Thor from, you know, the movies.
No.
And he's in the sauna acting like he owns
Downward
the sauna.
Downward Dog? Come on. No. No.
F.A., what's up, man?
A little bit of a different twist on yoga. I don't know if you guys heard here in Oregon, there's been goat yoga going on.
I've heard about this too, and I've heard that it's sold out.
1,200 people on the waiting list for goat yoga.
Gimmick.
Which I really hope isn't naked. That's just a bad crossover.
You just bring your goat to, or it's done on a farm where there's goats.
This one naked yoga place charges $25 per session. I don't know what the goat yoga, what the rate is for that or what the waiting list is on that, but I think I'll definitely wait on that.
Naked bike ride is a pass for me. Naked yoga is a pass as well.
Okay, good. Now we've settled that.
Yep. My 3-year-old has a balance bike and he's already practicing for the naked bike ride. I can tell you that. Every single afternoon at my house.
What do you think people do when they don't know that that's going on, and then you just look up and you see a bunch of people naked driving by?
The first year you live in Oregon is an eye opener. Like every month, there's just a new event every month that just reminds you that this place is not like other places.
Yes, yes.
The Blazers made a playoff. Let's hold a parade. You're like, what? They made the playoffs and they're having a parade?
Yes. And one more thing, I just want to get this off my chest. April.
The homeless people are rioting. They're blocking the working people who are trying to get to work. Other people who are complaining that they don't have jobs are blocking the people trying to get to work.
And they're
why?
Filling,
it's Portland.
They're filling potholes, too.
Yes.
April the Giraffe. This thing has just gone on and on and on. For those of you who don't know, April is a giraffe at a facility in New Jersey. And they've had a live camera on this giraffe for probably 6 or 7 weeks now. And essentially, every headline that you see online is, "Well, she's just about ready to give birth." And this is what this is what bothers me about this. Initially, there was a logo down in the lower part of the screen on the lower left hand side, and I can't remember what the first sponsor was, but I believe it was last week Toys R Us stepped up to then become another sponsor. So essentially, what's going on here is this park is exploiting this poor giraffe, who they keep saying at any minute is going to give birth. And I am getting to the point now where I question whether or not April is in fact even pregnant.
Her name's April?
Her name's April. So people are going, oh,
April Fools.
Exactly. Someone else brought this up to me the other day. I mean, are we all being duped?
April 1st.
Her name is April, and April 1st is next week.
They're going to come out and say she was never pregnant. The internet's going to be mad at that.
They've gotten a lot of mileage out of this. But if you've come across this, I'm sure, I mean, it's all over social media. And I can't, you know, every time I look at my computer, I'm getting some sort of notification about the giraffe cam that's going on with April. So I hope that April is well. I mean, no harm or ill will towards April.
Are we sure she's pregnant?
I know, that's why.
You think maybe she's just trying to hang on to her man?
I think it's a publicity stunt. I'm getting to wonder.
You think she just told him she's pregnant?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because she's 15 and he's 5, apparently.
Yeah. This will be her fourth calf, by the way.
There you go. So
I'm going to keep you updated on April because I smell a rat here.
It's April 1st. There's my
you
prediction.
You could be right. You
prediction.
Could be right.
Her name's April.
Yep.
April 1st, we're going to get, it's been a joke, she was never pregnant.
Well, I hope not.
Cat's out of the bag here on March 28th, guys. That's why you come to the show. Greg's in Sandy. Greg, what's on your mind, man? Greg, welcome to the show.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I didn't know. I didn't know you were talking to me. I was wondering about the take on Dickow. I was I missed the interview, but you were going to ask him about the UConn girls against. First I think you started NIT champs, and then we went down to high school state champs.
I've got a lot of people into that. I did not ask him. I'll text him right now, and I'll get an answer for that. But I got caught up asking him about Gonzaga and Oregon, everything else.
Okay, I just wanted to say also, totally with Kiki on the word is class when you call off the dogs as far as if somebody's way ahead like that. So
all right.
That's all I had to say.
Greg, appreciate the call. Appreciate that you listened to the show. Look, Kiki, you're getting a lot of support today. Two people have supported you on that front.
Do I hear three?
It's still
Greg, thank you. And we've got Dave and Aloha. I love it. Thank you for calling. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, I forgot to ask Dicko about.
I know. I was gonna hold up a sign, but I didn't want to interrupt you.
All right. I will text him and ask him, and I will tweet at it, and we'll talk about it on tomorrow's show. OmniGuard Security. If you're in the market for security, let OmniGuard secure your home. You want your home safe. You want your family safe. That's what OmniGuard Security does, and they do it with security for the modern world. Get a quote. See all their features by going online to OmniGuardSecurity.com. I did it on a commercial break. I called them up. I got a quote. I scheduled an appointment, and it was within days. They're at my house, system installed, everything humming along smoothly. I have never had a problem with them. Nothing but happy with OmniGuard. Go to OmniGuardSecurity.com or do what I did and call them at 503-970-7147. That's 503-970-7147. 7147.